Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, Rafah's last lifeline. Israel seizes the border crossing with Egypt, and Palestinians flee north by the thousands.
Israeli tanks are now blocking the main artery, bringing humanitarian aid into the strip, already experiencing a full-blown famine.
What's next for the people stranded there? I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. There's a sign at the Rafah border crossing in an outdoor waiting area. It's set up on the sidewalk. In big red letters, it reads, "I Heart Gaza." On Tuesday, a video shot from an Israeli tank shows it rolling over the sign, crushing it. You can hear a voice from the video reading the sign as it happens.
"I'm Gaza."
The crossing is now under Israeli control. For months, this was the area where Palestinians spent days and sometimes weeks, many sleeping on the ground, waiting for their names to be called to cross to Egypt. It's also the crossing where aid trickled in, until this week. Sara Khairat has been covering Rafah as people brace for the worst assault yet on Gaza's southernmost city. She talked to me from Doha. Good to have you back on the podcast, Sara. As part of your coverage, you have been reporting on Rafah. And that means you know that just hours after news broke that Hamas had accepted a ceasefire proposal, and cheers went up amongst people in Rafah. The Israeli military seized the Palestinian side of the Rafah border crossing with Egypt. More than 1 million Palestinians are sheltering in Rafah. What do we know about the situation there now?
Palestinians in Rafah are extremely scared. Many of them have been displaced 5 and 6 times even from all across the Gaza Strip. So, you know, they said that we were told by the Israelis, move to Rafah, that's the safest place you're going to be, and you'll be fine.
Israel has told around 1 million Palestinians in the northern part of Gaza to move down to the southern part of the territory within the next 24 hours.
People that left the north, people that left Gaza City, which is the central part of the Gaza Strip, and Khan Yunis, all of these places across the Gaza Strip, they were told to move south. And that's exactly what they did. They were forced to do that. Of course, no one wants to leave their homes. They get there, and then now they're being told that they have to move again. And of course, for them, it's extremely distressing and traumatic on many, many levels. And of course, a lot of those are children. And you also have them being told by the Israelis to move to these so-called safe zones, which include Khan Yunis, as well as other areas. But these are places that were former battlefields, places that have been decimated, places with barely any infrastructure, places that are also overcrowded already with tents where people don't have any homes anymore.
You laid out the beginning of a pretty vivid picture there. Can you describe in more detail what it actually looks like for people who haven't seen the images of what Palestinians are living through right now?
Imagine a place where buildings have been completely bombed, street after street, row after row. And if you look at the Gaza Strip, it's very small. I was there February last year, actually, for the first time before all this war happened. And one day, one of our producers, Safwat, joked we had a free evening, and he said, I need to give you the tour of the Gaza Strip. And I said, oh, well, how many hours do we have? And he said, don't worry, it'll only take you half an hour from top to bottom. And he laughed. And every time he was pointing these places out, but he said, it's home for us, no matter how small this place is, no matter how squeezed we are. the population of the Gaza Strip is standing at about 2.3 million Palestinians. Now, 1.5 million of those are squeezed and forced into Rafah. And not only are they with very little resources, there's barely any food, malnutrition is very much a thing. You'll see videos of children that look like three, but their real age is about seven, and almost on death's doorstep. And famine is very much real, certainly in the north, but it's spreading, according to the UN and all of the aid agencies, to the south. If the Rafah crossing remains closed, if Israel remains in control of it, and that's because a lifeline of aid is unable to get into Gaza through the Rafah crossing from Egypt.
Let's talk about that crossing, because leaving Gaza through the Rafah crossing had already been almost impossible for a lot of Palestinians who were asked to pay these astronomical fees to Egyptian travel agencies in order to get out. Aid flow through the border had also been very limited.
The amount that being delivered to the Gaza Strip is still yet incomparable to the immense needs of populations here, specifically those who are trapped in the northern part of Gaza and facing high rates of malnutrition and with different signs of famine looming on the horizon.
Now that the crossing is fully in Israel's control, what difference does it make for travel and for aid?
You've got nothing coming in and out for the last few days since the Israeli forces, despite international pressure, including from their ally, the US, telling them, don't bomb Rafah, open the crossing to allow more aid in. And despite that, Israel has completely ignored all of those warnings and has still gone ahead with this.
Virtually all humanitarian aid into Gaza was cut off. Aid organisations again sounding deep alarm over the risk of full-scale famine across Gaza.
Now, we're not just talking aid here, because a lot of those from Gaza that have severe injuries, life-threatening injuries, they have to be able to go through the crossing to the Egyptian side because they have hospitals there. Now, that's another thing. A lot of the hospitals don't exist anymore. There's no medication. People are having amputations without any painkillers. So that crossing is vital. And not only, Malik, was it vital during this war, it was vital before the war because a lot of the aid was coming through because Gaza has been under a 17-year blockade that doesn't allow Palestinians living there in and out easily unless they get special permits from the Israelis for exceptional circumstances. Sometimes, whether it was work to go and work in Israel, perhaps it was for medical purposes. But even then, the aid that was before the war going to Gaza was still not enough. So can you imagine what that must be like now? And this is why international aid agencies have come together, desperate, they said, desperate to ensure that aid does go through.
I'm Elena Rancella. I'm the Director of International Operations for MDM Fonds. Gaza is closed. Nothing is going on. Nothing and nobody is going out. Every hour that the Israeli army maintains this closure of this Rafah crossing is really a humanitarian catastrophe for the next hours and days of the Gaza population. The Israeli army just gave few hours to evacuate. We are talking about hundreds of thousands of people. The displacements constitute forcible transfer in grave breach of international humanitarian law.
This has been a condition that even the Americans now realize that if they don't do something about this soon, it will be, in the words of many, catastrophic.
So what's being done to change that? That's after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, three times per day with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Sara, this week, Cindy McCain, the executive director of the UN World Food Program, said there is a full-blown famine in northern Gaza.
What I can explain to you is that there is famine, full-blown famine in the north. and it's moving its way south.
South, where around 1.5 million Palestinians are sheltering in a place they've been told to go over the past 6 months, a place that is still being bombed. With Israel in control of the crossings into Gaza, what's been tried and what hasn't been tried to pressure Israel to change its course?
So if you look at the international community, a lot of the Western world has very much continued with this rhetoric that Israel has the right to defend itself and therefore what they're doing in Gaza is justified. But that has changed in the last few weeks, where now you're having people like France that have been very much a strong ally of Israel coming out and saying that this has to stop, that more aid needs to go in, and warning against the bombing of Rafah. Egypt, a lot of the Arab countries. And in the latest pressure that the US is trying to exert on Israel is that they've said that they won't transfer any arms to Israel.
The US paused a shipment of weapons to Israel last week over concerns about how those weapons might be used in a potential offensive in Rafah.
Will this put pressure on Israel? It remains to be seen, because Israel has shown that it's still going ahead with the bombing of Rafah despite international opposition and despite the pressure. You have a prime minister that has thousands of people, thousands of Israelis protesting against him. He also has his arm twisted by some of the far-right government members like Itamar Ben-Gvir, the national security minister, as well as Bezalel Smotrich, finance minister, who every time he doesn't do what they want, and they want the whole of Gaza bombed from the north to the south, and they definitely want this Rafah operation to go ahead, and it already has done, they are twisting his arm because they say they'll quit if he doesn't go ahead, and this is what he has to do. But then you also have Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu facing a lot of opposition from the families of those that are being held hostage, because those families want their family members back in Israel, safe, unharmed. And as a result, they say, take any deal, even if it means to stop the war, bring them back home. And that's the campaign and the slogan. So it seems the Israelis are still going ahead. And they just came out post Hamas agreeing at least to this preliminary proposal with the ceasefire deal, saying that the only way with Hamas is to put pressure on it. And that means militarily as well. And their justification for it is that Rafah has several Hamas battalions, that they control what goes in and out of Gaza themselves, and that's why they say they have to take control of it. If you speak to experts, not just in Israel, but diplomats that I certainly was speaking to back in Jerusalem, a lot of them say, we're not just talking about Rafah here, we're talking about consequences that are going to affect the Gaza Strip for years to come. And also the fact that Israel doesn't seem to really have a plan.
It's interesting when you mentioned Israel's plans and reasoning behind why they have to carry out this offensive in Rafah. Was the same said about Khan Yunis just a few months ago, that that is where the epicenter of Hamas was and that is why they had to enter Khan Yunis?
Absolutely. This is not the first time we've heard this. I've been following this day in, day out. Every single statement from the Israelis has always maintained right from the start of this war that they were just going to be focusing on the north and that was it. And then they kept moving further towards the south. And here we are. They did exactly what a lot of people predicted they would do, even though they denied throughout this time that that was their plan. And if we recall Al-Shifa Hospital, for example, at the time they said that they had to attack Al-Shifa Hospital. They had to get people out of there because this is, in their words, was where the Hamas Pentagon was. They said they even displayed a video saying the Pentagon was underneath Al-Shifa Hospital. And now we're seeing that there seems to have been mass graves where they killed a lot of Palestinians, and they're still just discovering it.
Breaking news from Gaza City and Al-Shifa Hospital, where a third mass grave has been found. At least 49 bodies have been recovered. Officials are currently exhuming.
And here we are, and they're using the same reasoning for Rafah, saying that the Hamas fighters who are based in Rafah were the ones that had carried out this attack, and that this is necessary, in their words, to achieve complete victory. On Tuesday, the Defense Minister, Yoav Gallant, said that they will continue with their operations deep, he said, in the north, in the center, and in the south of the Gaza Strip.
Yesterday, I directed the IDF to enter the Rafah area, take the crossing, and carry out its missions. This will happen all over the Strip, in the south, in the center, and in the north. We know that Hamas only responds to force.
Sara, finally, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said that Israel's war will continue until Hamas is ended.
We will enter Rafah because we have no other choice. We will destroy the Hamas battalions there. We will complete all the objectives of the war, including the repatriation of all our abductees.
It's a refrain he's repeated again and again. How many times do the people of Rafah have to evacuate? We're all waiting for this large-scale ground offensive. Countries warning against it. People waiting in fear of it. Where does that actually leave people who have been told to go south, looking for safety when there is no safe place in Gaza?
It really doesn't leave people in Gaza with much choice. Some people are so tired of being displaced again and again and again that they're even saying they will stay in Rafah, and if it means that they are killed, then so be it. People are exhausted mentally, physically, people of all ages, and people we know ourselves that, you know, people that I had met have said, how long can you keep running away from this? That you just have to perhaps stay where you are, stay put, and hope for the best.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Sariel Khalili and Khalid Sultan, with Sonia Bagat, Chloe Kaylee, Manahil Navid, Tamara Kandaker, Catherine Newhan, Tabish Talib, Ashish Malhotra, David Enders, Amy Walters, Zainab Badr, Bernisa Campana, and me, Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Nay Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back.